Oh, don't you just find when you're actually rushing to actually do one thing, all sorts of other things come into form. Isn't that right, Natalie Tuck? How are you this morning?
I'm a bit stressed, Alex.
I know. Well, don't. Just relax. It's all right. We've got Professor Scott Davison, the Pro Vice-Chancellor of the University of Lincoln, of which, of course, you graduated from with a superb result years ago for going on to do your postgraduate work at the University of Leeds, and then, of course, becoming one of the financial journal's top sort of souls, working on pensions, Scott. So a success story is our Natalie, as we like to say.
That's wonderful, Natalie. You're the kind of ambassador we need.
Exactly. Now, Natalie, ambassadorial duties notwithstanding, what's the stage of the shower? Because even MacDonald is intrigued by this. I said shower challenges. This is why it has to be a lot shorter than normal. What's the situation, Natalie? Share with us.
The situation is I haven't showered yet and I'm running late for work, but I haven't showered because basically my housemate got in the shower before me.
And that housemate, is that the New Zealand housemate, Natalie?
No, it's not. It's not.
Well, that's all right then. I just want to clarify
it's
that.
The pitfalls of the house share, you see, and only one shower.
There you have it, Scott. You know, that's the message of the working girl in the 21st century.
And isn't it wonderful? Radio is so wonderful because we don't get the pictures.
Yes.
Line entirely.
As you said earlier, we are limited only by our imagination.
Yeah, precisely, yeah. And one thing we can pretty much guarantee in the Mojo Week Drive Morning Edition, we'll not be introducing shower cam webcams as yet.
No,
it's not going to happen in any way, shape, or form. Okay, coming up next, we'll be talking to Billy Burrows. We'll be talking about pensions and a variety of other fine things. Very quickly, in terms of weather today, it's a high of 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 8 degrees centigrade, varying amounts of cloud with some sunny spells. Eva, last two questions for Natalie before she steps into that shower.
Have you had a very quick, reasonably telephonic link with us today?
Yes, it's been great.
And hopefully we'll be hearing again from you soon.
Yeah, for a longer
Yay!
Bit of time. Months has actually passed since George Osborne waved that magic wand, or at least paved the way for pension freedom reforms to take place. But how have things been impacting on us from that point of view? Well, there are lots of challenges, as one might have suspected, occurring, and to address some of those challenges and provide us with some sage words of wisdom to actually cope with the plethora of information when it comes to pension freedom reforms, we're delighted to welcome independent retirement expert extraordinaire. That would be the legendary Billy Burrows to the studio. Billy, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Excellent. So we've seen a number of sort of issues with respect to this particular pension reform bill, which clearly led to some people saying, yes, we'll just empty the pension pot now. We'll go for a golden ticket. Clearly, as in the tale of the tortoise and the hare and various other of Aesop's fables relating to long-term financial security, one has to be quite careful about what's actually being the case.
Well, absolutely. I mean, freedom is great, and I've been a great campaigner for more information and better advice, but there is a worry that people may fall into the trap of spending their pension money unwisely.
Now, obviously, we're talking today about you and your pension pot when you retire, published by, of course, your good self. What are the key things people can actually expect to find from that guide?
Well, I think the first thing that people will find is that it's really important to get help, and people can get help from their insurance companies, from PensionWise, but there's no substitute for financial advice.
As ever, we find that some of the statistics that came through from this particular survey from the Financial Conduct Authority suggest that 1 in 10 people are perplexed by the options available. 1 in 8 don't understand the tax implications. Indeed, more than 1 in 14 aren't even aware of the new rules. Is that as expected? Is it the kind of collateral damage that such changes will inevitably inflict?
Well, that's right. I mean, a lot of pensions experts have been hoping that after the initial rush to take cash, the market would settle down and people would start thinking about how best to take income from their pension pot. The point that I make is that it's easy to be tempted by the cash in the short term, but you know, people owe it to themselves to think about how they're going to get their income for their longer term retirement.
And this is one of the key points. So just addressing that, is it possibly that we've actually been looking at all the negatives of this? What are the positives of the pension reforms?
Well, the positives is that, you know, now people can choose exactly how they spend their pension. But as my old headmaster at school said, you know, freedom isn't licence. Just because, you know, people have freedom, it isn't licence to spend their money unwisely.
Looking at some of the other pension pitfalls that we've actually got, getting caught out by pension scams and high-pressure salesmen, allowing for the fact that in many instances you might be dealing, as people get more chronologically gifted or experientially enhanced, with folk who are a little bit sensitive. They might, maybe they've actually lost loved ones, they're suffering from bereavement, etc. It's even more important to be very wary of the get-rich-quick schemes, I presume.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's an old saying in finance, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. And it's difficult for people because, you know, with interest rates, you know, so low, the returns from, you know, annuities and even from, you know, some of the investments, you know, are lower than they have been in the past. So people have to be really wary if somebody comes along with a deal that looks too good to be true.
There are still folks who are on the PAYE, pay-as-you-earn scenario, which obviously is quite helpful from that point of view because you don't have to worry about it. But for a majority of folk who are actually on Schedule D and having to deal with their own independent tax, does this make it more complicated, less complicated, or would you say, no, what they need is a copy of my guide from williamburrows.com and that'll help them?
Well, they certainly need, you know, a copy of the guide. And in the guide, I talk about the tax treatment. But I think the really important bit is it doesn't matter, you know, what your tax circumstances. You need to take advice because you could move from being a basic rate taxpayer to a higher rate taxpayer without, you know, realising it.
Which presumably, in a sense, is good news for the Treasury on that one sense, that people can actually end up paying too much tax without, as you say, kind of acknowledging that somehow they've sort of shifted and they're losing out as opposed to making benefits.
Well, that's right. And in the guide, there's some good top tips. And, you know, a very simple, you know, tip is if you do want to take a lot of cash from the pension, think of doing it over a couple of years, because that way you may be able to keep your tax to a minimum.
We mentioned that it's 6 months since the official reforms kicked into place. You've obviously had over two decades experience as a retirement expert. Are you finding that this has panicked people more? Has it kind of meant that people have seized the baton and said, yes, great, we want to go with this? Or has it simply been a case of, well, it's at least provided more opportunities for independent financial experts to actually earn a living?
Well, I think, you know, there's good news and bad news. I think, you know, the good news is that people now are more engaged and have more options. The downside, and I think the real problem, is there is a so-called advice gap. If you have a lot of money in your pension pot, then you can get advice. If you don't have much in your pension pot, it might make sense to take it as a cash sum. But there's a lot of people in the middle who have got pots too big to take in cash, but not big enough to probably do some complicated, you know, drawdown planning. These people need advice, but it's more and more difficult now to access advice.
And if one was sceptical, would we look forward in years to come to, in fact, in a few years to come, possibly with ideological changes happening, to people saying, right, OK, we're going to stop all this and sort of return back to the way things were at the start of the 21st century? Or do you think pension freedom is going to stay with us for the foreseeable future?
There's no way back. And I think, you know, looking to the future, I'm optimistic because, you know, most people are, you know, responsible with their money. But I think the key message is that, you know, retirement can be a long time. So people do have to take a longer term view of their income requirements.
And of course, we need to add that one of the good news aspects that comes out of this is that the guide that you can download from williamburrows.com is completely free.
That's right. That's right. The Prudential have sponsored the guide, and it can be downloaded free. And don't forget that if people need advice, then there's a number of places to go.
William, it's been fantastic touching base with a good self. We've got two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today?
Yes, very good.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we'll connect with you again in the not-too-distant future. We noticed, actually, do you prefer William or Billy? Because it's very critical in terms of this sort of line of things. I mean, Billy Burrows sounds a wonderful sort of energetic, like Billy Whiz in many ways. William Burrows sounds more like an author. Just wondering where you go from with this.
It's Billy Burrows, and the website is William Burrows.
Then the loud sound, it seemed to fade. Came back like a slow voice on a wave of fate.
the moment of magical movie wonderment when the David Bowie Starman was featured in the Ridley Scott movie The Martian, together with lots of other bad or questionable 70s disco music, including, of course, Waterloo from ABBA, plus great material. I wonder, Professor Scott Davidson, whether our man who is our very own Starman in the starry area that is Leicester Square, Richard Starman Fitzwilliams, will actually agree that The Martian is an ace movie, or will he actually go down the line of Everest today? Who knows? Richard Fitzwilliams, welcome to the production. How are you?
Well, I'm first of all, I must welcome the theme of the Martian. Waterloo, it was great because, you see, it's the favourite tune. ABBA is the favourite group of Melissa Lewis, played by Jessica Chastain, who is the commander of a six-man crew who land on Mars. But the problem is they leave behind Mark Watney, played by Matt Damon, who they believe is dead.
Unbelievable. But he has to science the whatever out of Mars to actually... And he gets those potatoes growing. Wasn't that wonderful? An American on Mars, and he manages to grow potatoes from his own manure. It can happen, Scott. It can happen.
Well, I think we had a preview of that on an early Smash advert, didn't we?
You don't get those Martian Smash robots that are actually there. YouTube it, Eva. That's what I said. YouTube. The sort of strange Martians on an instant mashed potato ad. Much better than that, still. But what did you make of it, Richard? I thought it was outstanding. I mean, I'm throwing my hat into the ring straight away. Really enjoyed it. Would put it up in the same level as Ant-Man and even The Man from U.N.C.L.E., of which we agree to differ. But what did you make
Well,
of it?
I thought it was extremely good. This is Ridley Scott on cracking form. And what was, I thought, particularly significant was that tension is sustained throughout this entire movie, because when Mark becomes an international figure, after all, I mean, an astronaut that they've left behind, what are NASA going to do? Can they send? Will it be 4 years, or could it perhaps be another spaceship, or might there be foreign intervention? It's all handled well. It's edited.
Thank
well,
heavens
it's
for the Chinese, is what I say. Thank heavens for the Chinese.
I think they played a pretty pivotal role. And of course, I mean, to some extent, parts of it are set up. You've got the arguments between Teddy Sanders, played by Jeff Daniels, who's NASA's chief. You've got the head of mission, Vincent Kapoor, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, and you've got the crew supervisor, Sean Bean, engaging in planning as to how to rescue the intrepid Mark Watney. But yes, it is fascinating. Also visually very deft. You noticed, incidentally, it was filmed, a lot of it, at the Mars sequences on Wadi Rum. I remember Alga Abu Tai's encampment in Lawrence of Arabia. I mean, this is a very popular place for filmmakers in Jordan. I have to say that visually first class, it's an excellent script, it sustains tension well, it's Ridley Scott, who is very erratic, we know. One of the reasons that I find this film so fascinating and sometimes infuriating, from Alien and Gladiator on the one hand, to Prometheus and Robin Hood on the other, and trying to defend Exodus, Gods and Kings, bits of it were good, but the ending was so poor. He is a very resourceful filmmaker. This movie was absolutely top class, and people are enjoying it too. And also, it's one of those films that holds your attention. It's a fascinating story.
And indeed, let's give a little hats off to Harry Gregson-Williams, who actually composed the music, which we're fading into the background here. Very evocative, very nice. I mean, we talked about, obviously, the classic 70s and 80s tunes that were selected and put together within the sequence. We heard Starman, of course, Waterloo, which was a wonderful way in which they build that final escape vehicle. But you know, the thing that I liked about the whole process, as you know, Richard, a keen science fiction aficionado, and indeed science graduate, is it actually kept the science real. There was no kind of area we thought this is just completely impossible. It wasn't, you know, it worked on that basis alone.
Yes, it appears to have been pretty accurate. I understand that there was a bit of a hiccup when Mark Damon at a press conference was rather closely cross-examined by an astrophysicist, but
he's an actor. You can't have an astrophysicist questioning an actor and expecting immediate response. I mean, it's like me crossing swords with law in New Zealand with Professor Scott Davidson. It's not going to work, really.
I thought that this was it's an idea that came off. It's an audacious movie, and it's extremely well done. You've got a World Cup entertainment here, which, you know, I think will make, I hope it makes a lot of money worldwide. It certainly floated my boat.
And indeed, it smashed Robert Zemeckis and The Walk, which is obviously about a chap who actually walked on a tightrope between the Twin Towers.
Scott. Well, some of us suffer from claustrophobia, yeah, and also vertigo.
Exactly.
I suffer from that.
So you won't be seeing it on the IMAX screen, if nothing else. Scott, we're looking at the trailer for The Martian. Does it appeal to your good self?
It certainly does. Are there echoes of Apollo 13 in it, the way Richard has described it?
I would have said that. Apollo 13 crossed with Gravity for me. Those
were Apollo 13, after all, being very much a documentary-style movie, and Gravity, of course, having the freedom of fiction, which this had, yes.
Eva?
Yeah, I was just looking at the trailer. I think it looks very interesting. I like some of the visual effects, especially, was it Mars?
Indeed,
Mars?
It is Mars, yeah. Yes. And, of course, the spaceship and the gravity scenarios, and Jessica Chastain's in the whole process. And, yeah, that's a thoroughly enjoyable scenario. A little tease ahead now, because we know that time is of essence tight. But, Scott, you immediately said this morning, Everest, what's the connection between Everest and Lincoln? Share the magic, Scott, because I know that even Richard Fitzwilliams might not have got the Boole connection on this one.
Well, it may be a little tenuous, but George Boole, the father of modern computing, married Mary Everest, who was the daughter of the man after whom Everest was named. And, of course, George Boole was born in Lincoln 200 years ago, so we're celebrating his 200th anniversary. And he did some of his best work here before migrating to Cork.
A mere sort of 800 yards away from the studio.
Indeed.
A bit more.
Indeed.
Anyway, so there we are, Richard. That set the scene for Everest. Does it cut the mustard from the point of view of excitement and wonderment?
No, yes, you're absolutely right. That's what the movie's after, and it certainly does. So director Balthazar Kermakur does a good job. It's perfectly true that the movie doesn't delve into or particularly involve you in the personal lives of many of the protagonists, the product being, of course, The Simplest Time. And again, a lot of these movies have top names. We've got Josh Brolin, we've got John Hawkes, we've got Keira Knightley, we've got Jason Clarke. The point is, however, that where it really does deliver, and all credit to Salvatore Totino's photography, it's based on a real-life tragedy in 1996 on Everest, when there were these dreadful deaths in a blizzard, a surprise blizzard, which revealed the fact that there were errors in the way some of the climbing was being handled, that there were too many people attempting to get to the top. And there's no question, tensions sustained wonderfully well by absolutely superb visuals and the music, and also the fact that in 3D this really works. I mean, when you're climbing a ridge of ice, or when you're attempting to step by step get across a bridge, across a chasm, I mean, all of this is so well done, and it is this that is the strength. When these two exhibitions go up Everest, Helen Wilton is the camp manager, and that's, again, one of these. There are a lot of stars in this movie, and no question it works. No question that those who see it will, you know, she'd say Emily Watson, they'll spot the star, but they'll get very involved, because everyone else will be going to see it, and nobody will go and see it who isn't into mountain climbing or something, or excitement linked to this, and they couldn't possibly not find it thrilling. I've also ought to mention Jake Gyllenhaal again. It's a good performance. He's ahead of one of the expeditions, but chief guide. But it's the sort of movie, if you go and see it, you couldn't possibly be disappointed, because it really does deliver where it's important. The first part of it, you meet a large number of characters. You never really get to know them terribly well, but that isn't the point, and this is why people are going to go and see it.
It's very unfortunate in the trailer they have this fall, just as people are actually falling off the rope bridge, really. I think that's a bit unfortunate. They should have said this autumn. I know it's going for the American market, but still, you know, I'm being a pedant about this. Scott Everest, is this something which you think, yes, it's a real story? Let's check this one out.
Well, I was in New Zealand at the time in 1996, and one of New Zealand's best climbers died on that expedition. His name was Rob Ball. It was very tragic because he stayed with the party that he was guiding when he could have probably saved himself. So I'm not sure whether I'd want to go and watch it. It's it's probably a bit too close for me, I think.
Eva?
I don't know. I like adventure films, so it would sort of fit in with that respect. So I'm intrigued.
And yes. Needless to say, nothing to do with double glazing. Had to say it. You know, somebody was going to say it, but, you know, it's a case of fitting the best. It's a different line entirely. It just shows how we're corrupted by the commercial world on that basis. Richard, share with us where you are today in terms of Leicester Square, why you're there in terms of the London Film Festival, and also what are the sights that you're seeing in terms of the press representative and what you're actually doing, because I think we're all keen to find this rationale out. Why? Where are you?
Well, yes, I am in a cafe right next door to the Odeon Leicester Square, where they're having a press screening of Trumbo, the famous blacklisted screenwriter. And this is a movie that's already got Oscar buzz, and so I should be fascinated to see. I mean, as you know, the London Film Festival opened last night with suffragettes, some protests, as you will have seen from the photographs there on the red carpet, and also Carey Mulligan looking absolutely stunning. And it's a series of press previews, and that's why I'm picking up movies that have Oscar buzz, as Trumbo has, although it's still very early to tell, and then actually going on to a bigger other movies later in the day, and also Carol later in the week, which again a movie with Kate Blanchett, and she's picking up a BFI fellowship. I would just mention, if I may, on the London Film Festival, that 20% of the movies are made by female directors. The emphasis of suffragette movie made about the women's right protest, the right to vote, by women. And this is the emphasis, which I do think is excellent, because only 11% of movies overall are directed by women, and that is just so deplorable. And as you know, there's gender gap in pay, there's so much still to fight against that.
Well, again, both our colleagues over in Los Angeles, Dean Hagland, actually he's in Australia these days, and Phil Linus in Los Angeles, Chilpack Hollywood, running a series on great movies by female directors. It's something we're very keen to obviously promote from that perspective. Although it has to say, Betty Thomas's incarnation of I Spy, still questionable. But anyway, that's a different line entirely. Isn't it nice, though, that the suffragettes launched last night with a protest, just like Mars, in order to promote the movie? They actually found water and evidence of water on Mars. Just goes to show reality, art, it's wonderful. And of course,
I have the link. You got the link, and also you get the news. And that is usually a very healthy thing, because it brings to people's attention. I say this in the era of Netflix. As you know, there is a potential threat that next Netflix could screen movies simultaneously as they open in cinemas. This hasn't happened yet, but it's something that's very serious. It's important to stress that when the product itself opens, you've got the publicity, you've got the buzz, and you've got what you've just mentioned, incidents that do draw people's attention to the fact the film is on release. And like Macbeth, I must just mention this, opened in 40 cinemas, but I went to see it a second time, and it's absolutely packed up. Isn't that amazing for Shakespeare on screen?
It just shows if the screenwriter's got some sort of mojo working, then people will go and flock to see the whole thing. Richard, it's been fabulous touching base with your good self as ever. I think we'll probably talk more about Italy next week and a variety of other factors. But Eva, go on. Last two questions for Richard, please.
Have you had an interesting telephonic clink with us today?
Yes, absolutely.
Meryl Streep couldn't have delivered it with greater aplomb. It's fantastic. Anyway, the next one.
Yes. And will we be hearing again from you soon?
Indeed, and I hope we can also have a chat about some of the amazing sights in Rome then.
I think so. And meanwhile, if your tarpaulin's ready, if you're ready to actually press the ignition switch, then we're ready as well. My eye, and falling lunar fall. I think that song's gone on a cycle with me, from really enjoying it, liking it, then sort of thinking, oh, it's tiresome, it's far too cliche, etc. Now, probably 21st century, yeah, it's okay, it works, ABBA and Waterloo, and indeed it works in the soundtrack of The Martian as well, for reasons you'll have to see the movie to fully appreciate. It's a Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM, 32 minutes past 8 o'clock, 28 minutes to 9 o'clock in terms of the morning time, at least in Lincoln, England. The delightful Eva MacDonald and Professor Scott Davidson, co-hosts Midweek Drive Ets this morning, doing splendid stuff. Scott, I need to ask this question because I know it's in the area of, ooh, this could be a treat that could be just unparalleled, the possibility of you getting together to do a joint double act with Professor Matthew Craig. Well, that has rumours have reached our ears that this could well be, you know, the nitro and glycerin of the broadcasting world. Two relatively harmless chemicals separate, but together.
Well, I think C40 and a blowtorch probably describes it. Yes, it would be Scotty and Matt's morning mashup. And this is the Pro Vice Chancellor of the College of Arts, who is very keen to get on air.
Well, the offer's always there to join us on this particular program. Maybe we could start him off on the Midweek Drive and sort of take him step by step from that.
Yes, I will observe that the show only lasts 2 hours.
Right. 7,200 seconds, like to squeeze the juice out of every one. I wonder, has Andrew David been informed of this move?
I haven't tipped him a wink yet.
Best just between us, I think, at this particular stage. Up next, Arthur McKenzie. Hopefully he'll be joining us to talk about his views on the Rugby World Cup. Oh, well, never mind. Although, it has to be said, maybe it was all down to the Wales people. And we'll be speaking to the show director for Countryside Live, Charles Mills, plus Ian Lennox and William Sitwell. On Siren 107.3 FM, quick weather check. Highs of 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 8 degrees centigrade, varying amounts of clouds, some sunny spells, and possibly, just possibly, occasional showers. Something to be singing about children with that kind of glee, just because an old man went to bed, bumped his head and couldn't get up in the morning. It's not good, is it, Arthur McKenzie?
No, it's not at all.
Come on, you little fighter, as probably Johnny Wilkinson was saying to his former colleagues within the England football and the England rugby team. Arthur, what went wrong? What happened?
I just weren't ready. It's simple as that. In Australia, we're too good. It's quite a simple thing. It's amazing, you know, that... They're looking for Lancaster's head, but about 2 or 3 weeks before the World Cup started, Rob Andrew, who was right at the centre of things anyhow, made a remark to the press that he didn't think England were ready, and he was proved right, but he got vilified at the time for it. And I think Lancaster's actually done a good job of getting a lot of young good lads together. People forget what it was like in 2011, you know, when it was an absolute shambles. So he's brought some sort of discipline to the side. He's a bit of pride in the side, and the fact that they lost, well, it isn't the end of the world, is it?
Now you put it like that, Arthur, I can probably just about live with it. But, you know, had it not been for Sergio Aguero scoring six against another team...
dear me, don't mention that one.
They kind of, you know, they sort of redirect. Well, he scored five, of course. It was Kevin De Bruyne who got the sixth, but never mind. We'll talk more with Ian Lennox because I know he loves the... loves the scenario. In directions once again, Professor Scott Davidson in the studio once more, Arthur McKenzie. Now, Scott, you sort of didn't shock me exactly, but you weren't equally... too devastated by England's defeat at the Rugby World Cup.
Well, no, because I'm a dual national. I hold New Zealand citizenship as well. So one of the teams is likely to go a bit further, I think.
Yeah. That's fine from that perspective. But, you know, we progress ever onwards. And Eva, you were thinking about, would you get into the World Cup? Would you not get into the World Cup? It worked for football.
I did for football. You know, yeah. And I was a bit disappointed we sort of lost out again. Mm-hmm. I think we need to...
Of course,
build up on our football skills.
The good news is that whether it's association football game or soccer or indeed rugby, we crashed out in the first round in both cases. We obviously hesitant there. I appreciate there are Scottish people who might sort of think, "What's he talking about?" You know, or indeed Irish or Welsh or various other folks. We'll draw a line, I think, under it, Arthur. What do you think? We'll draw a line and sort of hold fire on that particular perspective.
Oh, yes.
Can I just ask Arthur whether or not you think, Arthur, they chose the wrong team for Australia?
Yes, I think they probably did. I think there was a lot of people left out of the squad that I think should have been in. People like Cipriani, who would bring something different to the side, you know, that he had a lot of flair. And I just think that perhaps... It's easy to say that, isn't it? You know, at the end of the day, you don't know what they're like in training. You don't know what their attitude is. There's a whole lot of other factors come into it, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how many people are carrying injuries. It's I haven't played football and rugby myself. You know, sometimes you go on the field and you go on at the detriment, really, because maybe you're carrying an injury, but you want to be there, you know.
Yeah, it's just, I think they got done over in the back row with the speed of the Australians.
It was rubbish. I mean, they were stealing the ball off them in fact, they might as well have just given them the ball.
Yeah, there was 9 turnovers, so it was a very
ridiculous,
high...
That.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Ridiculous.
Oh, but we're getting too technical.
No, it's quite okay. I can see Eva raising her eyebrows there, saying 9 turnovers. I'd only expected 7 at the most, but 9? It's unbelievable.
It's like a big off, isn't it?
Well, speaking of which, congratulations to, I believe, Nadja, who effectively secures the victory. Was that an aspect of sport in terms of the Great British Bake Off that you thought, Arthur, a must tune in for?
Interested.
There you are. And that's what you call the joy of life. Find out what William Sitwell thought about the Bake Off scenario in the second part of the programme. But I know, Arthur, what you're really keen on is what, pray tell, has Cameron Tilbury's musical selection been this week from Nashville as unveiled last night? And if you haven't had a chance to listen to the Midweek Drive on Wednesday, you obviously get the reprise of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, which this week is Moonlight Social and Rub a Little Dirt on It. Could be so written for the Rugby World Cup, couldn't it? Rub a little dirt on it. You know, that's the
yeah.
I did actually raise the comment with Cameron last night as his wife co-wrote this particular piece. That the tune I thought was wonderful, but bit of a problem with respect to some of the health and safety issues of the video. I'll let Scott comment on that when the whole thing works through. Are you ready, Arthur, for
yes,
Moonlight
I'm
Social
poised.
And Rub a Little Dirt on It?
Yes, I'm poised for it.
You wonder if 6 feet.
Unless you've decided to go all hyper technical on us, Arthur, you won't have seen the video to that particular number. But what did you make of the sound, albeit through the telephone?
It's funny to say that, but I would see the video in black and white.
Oh. Well, there we are.
It just had a sort of dated feel to it. You could actually see them standing on the back porch with their tall stove hats on and their potching still at the back, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from on that one, Arthur. Yes, getting a real, genuine, authentic taste of Americana. Scott, of course, you're blessed with being able to see the video in action and see the quite literal translation of when your computer's giving you problems, just get a handful of soil and rub a little dirt on it.
Yeah, the number of criminal offences that were committed in that video were quite remarkable. The assault by rubbing soil into somebody's face and then dumping it into their computer keyboard.
I did warn Cameron about this, and I said, whoa.
Musically, I quite liked it, though.
Eva?
Yeah, I'd say the same. It was the video was different, I'd say.
Yeah, extraordinarily so.
The harmonising with the song was very nice. I liked it. Yeah.
Apparently it all boils down to a well-known country saying that if you want to get down and dirty, you want to actually solve a problem, it's no good sort of fretting about it. You've got to get down and get dirty and rub some dirt on it. I'm still not happy with that explanation, though, somehow. And I wouldn't like to endorse it, obviously, from the point of view of some of our younger listeners who might think, yeah, that's what we do. And heaven only knows, Scott, what learning support or indeed edu might say if we actually sort of said, well, you know, what's all this soil on our keyboard?
Well, it shows a degree of innovation and creativity, I would say.
There you have it. Arthur, what does the rest of the day have in store for your good self? Will you be doing more creative wonderment? Will you, as Ian Lennox suggests, be furthering your expertise with respect to DIY? Because I didn't realise you were such... I knew you rebuilt houses, etc.
I just over and got out of the house today. I've been lashing our rain for 3 days. The sun's shining today. I'll go and do a bit of shopping with my wife.
Well,
it's as exciting as that.
Makes sheer perfection. Should you actually want to plan ahead, of course, thanks to John Wenham and his amazing events guide, St. Botolph's Church in Boston. I think that's right, St. Botolph's Church in Boscombe. On Sunday, the 11th of October, from 2:30 p.m, we'll be hosting the Royal Schools of Church Music annual choir festival, when church choirs from all over the Lincoln Diocese will be getting together to sing a special service with music old and new, up to 250 voices. I didn't think that 250 people could actually fit into Boston, but still, there we are. 200, sorry, Boston, I know. It's blame it on their Australia result. 250 voices singing favourite anthems and songs in perfect harmony, under the conductorship of Eric Prentice, who's Director of Music in Lincoln Cathedral and Lincoln Minster School. So a rehearsal for the services starts at 2:30 p.m. and the service itself at 5:30 p.m. During the service, choristers who achieved their Dean's and Bishop's Awards will be presented with their medals and certificates. So there we are. That's taking place at St. Botolph's Church in Boston this coming Sunday, the 11th of October, from 2:30 p.m, the annual Diocesan Festival. Very good. If you just fancy coming down to Lincoln. Arthur, you are the first in our series of Newcastle-based correspondents that are on the show today. Some people said you can't fit in more than three Newcastle correspondents. Well, yes, because Ian Lennox is joining us in the second part of the production. Clearly, Professor Scott Davidson still celebrates your wonderful border ancestry, really. And Newcastle or sort of further Northumbrian?
Northumberland, really, yeah.
And Bill Steele will be coming back on the show as well.
He's a name from the past, mate, isn't he?
Exactly. See, this is the point. But astonishingly, there are some folk who, if they were just completely brainwashed by the ideology of Mike Neville, might never have actually turned the channel. Isn't that right, Scott?
Well, I never got over to Tyne Tees at that point in the day, I have to say.
I can tell you're shocked, Arthur, but still, yes, sir. A non-Tyne Tees person in the studio is just outrageous, nevertheless. Eva, any questions you want to put to Arthur about life, the universe, or anything, really?
I was just going to ask what Arthur's planning to do for the day.
Which you just have, and he might go out. Well, it's like a repeat, it's like a rerun.
This is Groundhog Day, isn't it? But funny enough, I'm not going to see Groundhog. I'm going to maybe see The Tempest tonight. So there you are, a little bit of Shakespeare.
Arthur, we are such stuff as dreams are made of, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Scott, would you like to put those last two questions to Arthur? Because Eva, being a Lincolnshire lass, he may not understand them.
I was going to say, speak for yourself on that last point, actually. Arthur, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic exchange with us today?
It has been very reasonable.
Thank you, and can we look forward to hearing from you again?
I hope so.
Thanks, Scott. This is Siren FM.
The Rock Train, leaving the station every other Thursday, 8 till 10, bringing you the best local and international bands from the world of rock and metal. The Rock Train. No tracks are too heavy.
is your Miss Teen UK progress going? Because we spoke briefly last night. You were doing sainthood stuff on Tuesday this week, where you were visiting young people and so on. How's it going as Miss Teen Lincoln?
It's going very well, I think. It's I haven't got any more places to visit at the moment, so I'll just go along with it. But
and when do we find out when you take on board the title of Miss Teen UK?
Well, I hope that'll happen, but I don't know. But in about 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks and a bit.
Yes. Very exciting, isn't it, Scott? You know, you'll be sitting next to the future Miss Teen UK.
I know. I've never been in such exalted camp.
You are. Even more exciting than Jason Bradbury. Being on campus today, it is, of course, a great happening. Future Fest, a fantastic scenario. Past, present and future technologies. With, of course, Jason Bradbury, who's been interviewed, of course, I think Seb did a fine piece with him on Siren FM. Visiting lecturer these days, of course, Jason Bradbury. A starry on the day with a replica of the DeLorean time machine.
No, it's the real one.
It is. It's not a replica. It's the real one. Marty McFly will be beside himself, and don't get me started on Einstein the dog. Well, best not to, actually.
Was that a pun? Beside himself.
Exactly. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw what you did.
If we had Christopher Lloyd in here, he would just go crazy with it, with excitement. Visitors to the university, of course, will see firsthand the technological revolution over the past 30 years and be given the opportunity to engage in a wide range of activities, including virtual reality gaming, 3D printing, state-of-the-art robotics, and interactive media. Of course, it's a proud boast of all programmes on Siren FM that we broadcast in full 3D, Scott.
Yes.
Here we reach out, we can actually touch, it's coming out of the speaker at you.